Mountain State Mysteries contains mature themes and discussions that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. All individuals mentioned in this episode are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey, y'all. I'm your host, Mark Covey.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case we have for you today is one that I found myself going back to so many times. Time and time again, I often wondered how this case went cold. On a rainy morning in 1981, in a small community, a secretary arrives to work and is shocked to see a part owner of the business dead. His death sent off a spiral of emotion and controversy, and 45 years later, it hasn't faded away. This is the case of Charles Boone. Charles Edwin Boone was born on April 9, 1947, the first of three children born to John and Millicent Boone. He grew up in the small community of Roncefort and was a graduate of Greenbrier High School in 1965. He attended Marshall University, where he received a BS in accounting in 1969. In 1966, he married his high school sweetheart, Connie Rains.
It's so sweet. I love little love stories like that.
I do too. Did you know Nanny and Papa were high school sweethearts? Charles was one of many West Virginians who took advantage of the newly revived Appalachian economy. He was a certified public accountant that decided to leave Charleston, West Virginia and move to Bluefield in 1978. He started to work at WH Holdings and set up offices at the old Diversified Savings and Loan, which the building is still there today at 355 Bluefield Avenue. By 1980, he settled in and got busy in both his personal life and business life. With his wife Connie, son Brent, and their daughter Amy, the family lived along Walnut Hills, which is described as an upper middle class neighborhood, just a little over a mile away from his office in Bluefield.
As the director of the Charcon Corporation, he acquired ownership of three Kingfield restaurants locations, one that was in Bluefield, Pineville, and another in Kingsport, Tennessee. He was a member of the Greater Bluefield Chamber of Commerce and the director of the Southern Chapter of the West Virginia Society of Certified Public Accountants. So this man had a very busy life.
It seems like it. Honestly, I know how much you and I do. Like, we are nonstop all the time. I can only imagine how little time he actually had in his life to be social and with his family.
I know, because it blows my mind a little bit, because I think about my work schedule and the amount that I drive, and legit, I have a day to get everything done at my house that I need to get done. And then for us to find time in between my work schedule, your work schedule to record the podcast.
Yeah.
And anything else that we're up to.
It's hard.
It really is.
On November 20th, 1980, Charles and Kenneth Meadows, who went by Ken, so I'll just call him Ken from here on out, formed Boone Meadows and Associates, a public accounting firm, which also set up offices in the same building along Bluefield Avenue. On the surface, everything seemed to be perfect. Charles made good on business practices and his investments. There was zero indication for what was coming. By the late winter of 1981, financial concerns apparently developed in the relation to him being director of Charcon.
First and foremost, let me just say something really quick. Boone Meadows is such a good name.
Yeah.
Not because it's my last name, but I mean, it just has a really good ring to it.
Yeah.
And like, what exactly are you meaning with his, you know, relation to Ben? with SharkCon?
Well, it was rumored that large debts had accumulated to around a quarter to possibly $500,000. According to authorities, it was likely this strange financial situation would bring matters to what they called a sudden and tragic end.
Hey y'all, I'm Elisa.
And I'm Samantha.
And welcome to Watch for Deer Podcast. We're a couple of best friends from Southern West Virginia, and around here, Watch for Deer is our way of saying we love you and be safe.
This is a conversational podcast that covers many topics from A to Z, including, but not limited to, true crime and the paranormal. Our goal is to bring you an episode a week, so come listen as we tell stories that will make you laugh and maybe even blow your mind. Y'all be safe,
and watch for deer.
Saturday, March 14th, 1981, was a cold and wet day. Charles did not keep normal bank hours, so working weekend mornings wasn't anything uncommon for him. That day, he was scheduled to meet with someone.
Any indications of who this someone is?
You know, all that I know is that it was possibly his partner at SharkCon, Michael Pendry. His wife said that he woke up at 6:25 a.m. and left their house. He also made plans to attend a prayer breakfast following this morning meeting. He left his home and drove to his office. Now, what happened between 7 a.m. and 8 a.m. is still a mystery. What I know is that Charles arrived to his office and made it to the third floor. 1 hour later, at 8 a.m., Wanda Davidson, his secretary, arrived to the office for, you know, just a normal work day. She parked her car and walked to the front of the building to go through the main entrance. She was actually surprised to find the door leading to the main foyer unlocked. Knowing this wasn't normal, she entered the building with caution. She entered the elevator and went up to the third floor. When the doors opened, she saw Charles laying face up with this brown sports coat over his head. She hurried and called the Bluefield Police Department, and an officer was dispatched to the bank.
Any idea what the distance was between the police department and the office building?
Oh, it was less than half a mile. 3 minutes after the call, Detective C.L. Honaker arrived to the scene. By this time, commercial bank employee John Thomas arrived to work. John and Detective Honaker took the elevator to the third floor and examined Charles's lifeless body. Detective Honaker noticed that a plastic bag was laying over his face. On the slim chance that he still may be alive, he removed the bag. There was no response. Detective Honaker said that Charles laid where he was for an hour. Pathologist pronounced Charles Boone dead at the scene. On the floor and walls, you could see that there was a struggle. Boot marks, scratches, and gouges were seen on the walls and floors coming down the hallway towards the elevator. He was fully clothed in brown checkered trousers, a light brown shirt, and brown, like, cowboy-type boots. His tan sports coat had been pulled over his head. Detective Honaker later said this about the sport coat. Quote, on backwards, like it had been pulled over his head with the tail end of the coat near his head. End quote. Years later, another detective came forward saying the sports coat was a murder weapon. His wallet was found on the ground near his right armpit. Everything was in his wallet. Everything that was in his wallet was scattered on the ground. However, his watch, wedding and class ring, and his gold necklace were left untouched. Other evidence at the scene indicated that he put up a good fight before he was murdered. Police gathered that the security system of the building did not work in the lobby of the bank and where the elevator was located.
What do you mean? I mean, that's just weird.
Basically, the security system didn't cover the entrance, which, like you said, is really weird to me, but I guess back then the entrance of a building didn't need one, which doesn't make sense to me at all, but
that don't make a lot of sense to me either. I mean, I'm pretty sure banks had security back in the day. Yeah. But one of my biggest questions is, exactly how many people had access to the building?
Well, there were at least 3 different businesses in the building, so technically a lot of people had access to it. Once the crime scene had been secured and well documented, his body was taken to the chief medical examiner's office in Charleston, West Virginia. During his autopsy, they found out that the cause of death was manual strangulation, and it wasn't made public until the following Monday. Up until that day, authorities didn't even confirm that it was a homicide.
It makes you wonder, why wouldn't they confirm it was a homicide?
Well, what I found out is that it was an investigative strategy of keeping the information held close. It was kind of custom for the then Bluefield Chief of Police, James Tony Bivens. That day, he would only confirm the broad cause of death as described in the official autopsy report and declined further comments. He said, quote, "Facts about this case are critical to the investigation, and I am not in a position at this point to say anything about anything," end quote. As the investigation into the death of Charles Boone unfolded, Officer Bivens became the department's frontman for relaying new information. Sadly, James would also become known as James No Comment Bivens. His investigation style was low-key with little public involvement, which would cause the public to learn little about the murder investigation in the first 7 weeks. The lack of transparency would frame the investigation against local politics and media criticism. A closer examination of the crime scene revealed no fingerprints or other evidence pointing to any individuals. A canvas of the neighborhood, including traffic stops, turned up nothing as well.
Any unusual activity reported?
No, that's the thing. Nothing, especially around the bank, the time of the murder. Like, around the time of the murder, there was nothing. With little physical evidence to go on, authorities turned their attention to Charles himself.
Excuse me?
They basically examined his personal endeavors closely. Remember the Charcon partnership and remember the Charcon partnership I mentioned in the beginning of the episode?
3 locations.
Right, his partner was Michael Pendry, another well-known businessman and member of Greater Bluefield Chamber of Commerce. Close inspection of Charcon records showed that the corporation was between $250,000 and $500,000 in debt, like I said. During the week leading up to his death, Charles reportedly informed Michael of the financial issues. At this point, Michael was reportedly placed in charge of the corporation's bookkeeping and decision-making. There was other evidence that indicated that Michael and Charles had scheduled a meeting at the Commercial Bank for the morning of Saturday, March 14th, for the purpose of reviewing Charcon's financial reports. For some reason, Michael did not attend the Saturday meeting. Charles's secretary, Wanda, said that the meeting between Charles and Michael had been scheduled for both Friday, March 13th, and Saturday, March 14th. She later testified that, to her knowledge, both meetings had been canceled by Charles. It was later rumored that Michael had injured himself on the morning of the 14th and missed the meeting due to a damaged contact lens. The investigation turned up inconsistencies in Michael's story, which, court, I did find some of the written telephone log. Do you care to read it?
Quote, Pendry states that Boone's called him between 3 p.m. and 4:15 p.m. on Friday, March 13th, and canceled their meeting scheduled for 7 a.m. Saturday. Redacted states that this conversation did not take place, and Boone's handwritten telephone log does not show this call. Telephone records indicate that his call did not take place. Wanda Davison worked in the Bluefield office with Redacted on Friday until 7:30 p.m. Sometime prior to 7:30 p.m., Mrs. Davis cannot be positive of the time Pendry called and talked with Wanda, end quote.
So with this, a warrant for Michael's arrest was obtained on the afternoon of May 1st, 1981. He was arrested at his office and charged with homicide, and later released on a $10,000 bond. Michael calmly but firmly said he was innocent. The preliminary hearing was scheduled for Thursday, May 21st. Authorities felt like their case was solid. The court, however, disagreed. After a 5-hour hearing, County Magistrate Ernie Six ruled that no evidence for probable cause had been shown to justify the sending of this case to a grand jury. The dismissal of the charges against Michael sparked political fires and led to the calls for Chief Blivens' dismissal. I mean, for a while it seemed that everything going on politically would bury Charles' murder investigation. At least one member of his family had enough.
Hey y'all, I'm Dan, and I host a podcast called Kinfolk, Stories of Community and Connection. I talk with folks from all over Appalachia, artists, small business owners, local legends, you name it. We share real stories about what brings us together, what keeps us going, and all the magic tucked away in these hills. If you're into small town charm, big hearts, and good conversation, come hang out with me on Kinfolk. You can find it wherever you get your podcast.
Hi, I'm Shane.
I'm Hannah.
And we're Country Roads Creeps. We're a podcast that covers all manner of creepy, spooky stories, from cryptids and conspiracies to unexplained deaths and disappearances to mysterious and paranormal happenings in the world.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. Check out our Facebook page and our Instagram account at Country Roads Creeps for photo dumps and more information we'll post with every episode.
If you enjoy the show, please feel free to share us with your friends and leave us a 5-star review. And if there's any topics that you'd like to hear us cover in the future, feel free to message us on our social media accounts. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Well, be safe driving home and watch out for the not deer.
Bye.
Bye.
In an emotional newspaper article, his brother Richard said, quote, "To say the least, I was shocked to read your article, This is Police Work, concerning the murder of Charles Boone, a respected businessman, but most of all, a father, a husband, and my brother. Yes, this is Police Work, and I find it hard to believe that you or anyone else can consider anything surrounding this investigation a comedy. If you can bring yourself to seriously consider the important matters in this case, then please consider the following. Consider the fact that there are now 2 small Bluefield children who no longer have a father to love, to depend on, to support them, or to turn to in a time of need. Consider the fact there is a widow who must somehow raise these children and try to make their lives as normal as possible. Consider the fact that there is a widower, Charles's father, who lost his wife as a direct result from Charles's untimely death. I am truly sorry that some people's toes have been stepped on, or if their reputation has been damaged. But are these things really important? Have you considered that Charles Boone is dead, and no one has lost more or been hurt more than his family? Can you forget his death so easily?" End quote.
This wasn't even all of the article, but it was truly moving, so I honestly had to kind of cut it down some for time's sake. I honestly do not blame him for this. His wording and everything was absolutely perfect to me.
I just honestly, just from what was told in the initial report, to even now, I don't feel like his murder was justly investigated.
Oh, no.
In word. My other thing too, why would they go before a magistrate to decide whether or not?
Yeah, see, I don't know.
Like, that don't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Same.
But I have a feeling though, whoever it was, they knew Charles. And they knew exactly what time he was going to be at that office that day. And I think it was a come up from behind, pull the coat over him, strangle, drop him down, go from there. And that way he never seen who his murderer was. But I feel his murderer was a very close contact. And I hear a lot of little corruption going around like it always does when it comes to some of these cases.
Yeah. After a while, this case died down in the public eye.
How long?
It only took a year for the case to become cold.
Surprise!
By March of 2002, DNA technology had become well known. The advances in this technology led for Charles's family and the investigators to wonder if maybe this could maybe shed some light on this murder. I mean, authorities did wonder if Charles put up a good fight with his killer. This caused them to think that maybe part of his killer was in the grave with him.
Under fingernails.
It's like you can read my mind. So, at the request of his family, the investigation into his murder was reopened, with Lieutenant Mike Helton now over the case. Arrangements were made to have his body exhumed for examination. With this, authorities began interviewing and re-interviewing locals in hopes that maybe some memories could recall things that they couldn't before. On Tuesday, March 6, 2002, the casket was removed from its plot. Representatives from the state medical office, along with Charles's daughter, Amy, and brother Richard were on location. The process was swift and efficient. Forensic evidence was removed from his fingernails and hair. Less than an hour later, his body was back in the grave. The evidence was taken back to the medical examiner's office in Charleston for testing, which was said that it could take up to 6 months or even longer. Sadly, the results turned up no usable DNA samples. With the media attention of this also brought forward some new information. Some locals got in touch with the Bluefield Police Department.
Do we know who?
Sadly, no. Their identities have never been made public. However, the information they gave was made public. One said that he may have came face to face with the killer just minutes after the murder. The person said that he was working in North Carolina at the time of the murder, but returned to Bluefield for his birthday. On the morning of the murder, he was walking in front of the bank on his way to a parking garage. As he was passing the bank, an olive-skinned stranger in a black raincoat suddenly darted out from the bushes. Startled, the men stared at one another for a few seconds. The witness recalled that the man seemed to be in a hurry and looked like he was just in a fight. Just something about this person stuck with him all these years.
Why didn't he come forward sooner?
Well, he was actually on his way back to North Carolina right as the murder was discovered. So he was on the road and I guess didn't think anything of it till all this news came up in 2002. Former Mercer County Sheriff Daryl Bailey, who you may remember from our episode on Brenda Gale Lambert, worked with the witness and developed a sketch of the man, which you can see in our YouTube video. He was described as being 5'11", had a muscular build, weighing around 200 to 235 pounds. He was Mediterranean or Italian. Another witness, who was a clerk at a grocery store, recalled a man matching his description, attempting to cash a New York check on the same day. This request was refused and the man left. The sketch was shown to the clerk and he confirmed that it was the same guy. Further investigating led authorities to J&P Construction, who Charles had business with. It was said that Charles owed J&P around $30,000 for renovations to the Kingsfield restaurants. This led authorities to focus on a person of interest, a man who actually matched the sketch. So they did what anyone would do. They took the sketch to some former employees, and they said that they did recognize the face, but they advised that it wasn't the person of interest, the company's money collector, but it looked more like his son.
You know what this is sounding like?
What?
A good old-fashioned mafia hit.
Yeah, in a way. And actually in 1981, according to the police report, a person close to Charles recalled in a conversation, quote, Miss Davison called Redacted at Redacted around 9 a.m. and told him Redacted Charlie is dead. At this time, Redacted told Wanda, Charlie called me yesterday around 4:30, and Redacted, Charlie said that he had to meet someone with $10,000 or he would lose more than his house. Redacted then drove directly to the bank and went to the second floor and met with Wanda Davidson, Ken Meadows, Rick Boone, and Donna Boone, end quote. Authorities believe that the suspect may no longer be in the United States. They are still searching for the father and son, and their identities still have not been made public.
This week will make 45 years since the murder of Charlie Boone. If you have any information on the case of Charles Boone, please contact the Bluefield Police Department at 304-327-6101.
We'll be back next week with a new episode. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow, download, and rate the show on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find a good West Virginia true crime podcast.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube, all at Mountain State Mysteries.
Do you have a case you want us to cover? Send us an email at mountainstatemysteries304@gmail.com.
For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.